5:06 in the Fast Lane. Time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Brad Thompson is out. Bad Brad is what we just called him.
Bad Brad.
But Brad Barnes, Chris Ranji, Randy Carricker are here. And we have Take It or Leave It coming up in a moment. You can send your text in to the Hot Shots text line at 65780. Before we get to Teoli, the Blues may have gone worst to first this year, but they don't have anything on a horse named Mr. Chang. On July 11th, Mr. Chang was grazing in a pasture when a sinkhole opened up and swallowed him. Now, most horses would probably get injured and have to be put down after something like that, but not Mr. Chang. Just 12 days after the sinkhole incident, Mr. Chang powered through the pain and won the Prince of Wales Stakes. Take it or leave it. That's the comeback story of the year.
Well, at least he's not at that one racetrack that has to kill all the horses all the
time. Santa Anita, right?
Which one is it? It's not Del Mar, right?
I think there were a couple that have had horses die this summer.
What's the one that's had like 10 in the last 6 months?
It's Santa Anita.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is that one. Well, if he was at that course, they just wouldn't have even bothered.
Would not have been great.
He'd be a goner.
Monday night at Jerry World, Queen and Adam Lambert brought their Bohemian Rhapsody tour to the stadium. And during the playing of Fat Bottom Girls, they brought out the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. Take it or leave it, there wasn't one.
Oh, wait a minute. There might be one, but probably not. I'm going to leave it.
Yeah, I'm going to leave it. There wasn't one.
They are... So I know a couple of people who've been NFL cheerleaders, and they, like, their coaches or whatever you want to call them, they are cruel.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you put on a couple of pounds, they will let you have it.
They and notice.
Yes, and they'll wear you out in front of everybody.
That's not good.
Oh, no, that's got to be hell. And it's like $50 a game. It's not even.
Yeah, right.
That's not worth it.
No.
Anyway, we did mention earlier today, Randy, that the Cubs have sent down Addison Russell. He is down in AAA, Iowa, after a pretty poor performance since he's been back with the team. And we all know of his domestic violence issues, allegedly. Take it or leave it, Addison Russell ruined his career by being a bag of crap.
I will take that.
I'm going to take it, too, because I think everything he's done... And the way he behaved, and then the long road to get back, it's got to be up in his dome.
He would still be their shortstop. He wouldn't even have been trying to play second base. He'd be their shortstop still.
And you're probably going to have another team that's interested.
Yeah.
Like on a minor level, they'll take a flyer on him, but I would be surprised if he ends up being an everyday major leaguer again.
For an extended period
of time.
Yeah. But... I could see one of the Florida teams or Oakland, one of the teams that really doesn't have a fan base, picking up a guy like that.
Tampa, they don't need him.
Big Ziz, what do you got for us?
So today, Chris Bryant exited the game for the Cubs with right knee soreness. Take it or leave it, he's not really injured. They're getting him ready for a blockbuster trade.
Ooh.
Leave it.
I'm going to take that. That's going to be my hot take.
Hey, it is hug watch time.
It is, yeah.
Now until the 31st is hug, so it's a week from today.
How about Bryant to boring for Marp?
Randy, I would take that deal so fast.
If you're the Cubs.
If I'm the Cardinals.
Really? Oh.
To get Chris Bryant here?
He hates his town. It's boring.
He'll learn to love it.
Marp is the honorary chair, I'll have you know, for Homers for Health.
That's great. I need him to hit bombs, though. You're telling me that right now, even with their injury history, straight up trade.
Chris Bryant would be booed to the heavens here.
I think they'll get over it.
You think?
I think they'll get over it when he hits two homers in a game for him. My God, I love Matt Carpenter,
and
everything
pumped?
He's done. I would Steve Ballmer. I would drive up and get him and bring him back. Absolutely, I would take Bryant in a Cardinals uniform.
All right.
Hell yes. He's okay. An MVP.
There's the hot take right there.
There it is.
Take it or leave it. Growing up, you thought quicksand would be a much bigger problem in your life.
Take it.
Yeah, I'll take that.
I thought for sure I was going to run into it somewhere.
Yeah, I was worried when I went on playgrounds that had sand that it was quicksand.
I have. I do know how to get yourself out of it.
Really?
You have to wiggle.
Oh, okay. Wiggle, I saw that wiggle. On a documentary about people that were building train tracks
Randy,
in the olden days.
Nope.
What?
Nope. That was Blazing Saddles.
That's what's the name of the documentary.
Yeah.
Guy named Bart.
It was a Mel Brooks movie, and he didn't make documentaries.
Oh. Darn it.
Mel Brooks, dead or alive?
Dead. I think he's still alive.
I think he is still kicking.
I wonder if he's still funny.
Well.
Some people don't think he is.
He's 93.
Ooh. See, some people don't appreciate that kind of humor. I do.
Mel Brooks?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
There you go.
Yep.
Careful. That's my kind of humor.
Careful.
Right.
Yep.
So, don't
it
know
was
if
a
you...
letter that he was reading. It was a speech.
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Yep. She was not talking about the speech.
Wrote a blazing sample.
Yeah.
Don't know if you guys know this or not, but last NFL season, Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
50 touchdown passes.
50.
The next closest was Andrew Luck at 39. Take it or leave it. Somebody besides Mahomes throws for 50 in the next 5 years.
Take it.
Andrew Luck.
Take Baker it. Mayfield.
Baker, huh?
Ooh. What do you have, 27 as a rookie? Playing half the season?
27, yep.
It's your guy right there. Now he's got...
he had a lot of attempts,
Odell Beckham.
Though.
Yeah, he's got
486 attempts. Mahomes had 580.
His coach is Freddie Kitchens, though. It's going to be bad.
No, their offense is going to be fine.
Okay, they're going to be fine.
Kitchens is an offensive genius.
Cleavon Little, dead or alive?
Alive.
Nah, he's dead.
And they've got the bookend tackles, too, Randy, over there with the Browns.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Solid line.
Yeah, Greg Robinson starting at left tackle.
So
G-Money.
No,
you can build the team around
already
that guy.
You already think Baker is going to spend most of the game on his back?
No, on his front, because it's a left tackle.
Okay, that's right. He's just going to get blindsided every time.
How many touchdowns does Mitchell throw next season?
Mitchell?
Trubisky?
Yeah. Oh, probably 60.
Did they add a receiver for him? They got rid of Kevin White, correct?
They did. They couldn't count on him.
No. I thought they added a receiver.
See, I think they drafted one. They did. I can't remember his name.
He's going to have to throw for more because they got rid of Jordan Howard. He's got Tariq Cohen there.
Yep. Let's see. Who did they draft? It was Riley Ridley.
Okay. I will go with... I'm going to go with Mitchell throwing 24. 24 touchdown passes.
Yeah, I think it's going to be in that range.
Yeah.
They should have drafted Mahomes.
Should have.
And take it or leave it, the Cardinals should have made re-signing Lance Lynn more of a priority.
I'll take that.
I'll take it now.
I think there were some issues beyond baseball, not on Lance's part, but on the Cardinals' part, that made them decide to not pursue him more. But that's the sort of personality and the sort of production that they could really use right now.
It's what we talked about yesterday. It's the kind of production that helps get them into the playoffs, but they still would have the problem of who takes the ball game one.
Mm-hmm.
Unless somebody emerges here in the next 2 weeks and says, I'm the guy because of what I've been doing. They just don't have it yet.
Thanks, Big Sis.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for your text to the Hot Shots text line, 65780. Cardinals have been very adamant in recent years about not making a deadline deal that would put the team in a vulnerable spot. But sometimes those deals are totally worth it. That's next on 101 ESPN. Major League Baseball's trade deadline is 1 week from today. Have the Cardinals done enough since the All-Star break to convince you that they should be all in at the trading deadline, trying to clinch a playoff spot? They're only a half game out of lead in the National League Central coming into today. Cubs are still winning at San Francisco at the moment. But the Cardinals have given themselves, at least mathematically, an opportunity to win. So do you think they should buy and buy big at the deadline? We want to hear from you with the Mic Drop feature on the 101 ESPN app. You know, it's interesting, Ronj, as you get to the trade deadline, sometimes deals that you make are not worth it. I would argue, and I think you believe that this is the case too, if you make a deal and you win with that deal, not necessarily because of it, but you win with that deal, then that deal is worth it. That's the way I look at it.
There's no other way to look at it. Because maybe from the perspective of ownership, because I don't know, winning a World Series, even with winning a World Series and you've got some bad contracts, maybe in the end you come out on the wrong end as far as the money you make from it. I don't really know that to be the case. I don't see how it could be true, but maybe it is. But from a fan's perspective, absolutely not, because I don't care what anybody I root for, or anybody, any players on my team, what they make. It doesn't, if I've got a team with a payroll of $50 million and they win the World Series, I don't get more enjoyment out of it if they have a team with a $200 million payroll and win the World Series, because all I know is they won. I don't care how much is being spent on it.
I think even if you get to the World Series, if you get to Game 7 of the World Series, it does make it worth it. Obviously, you'll love having the pleasure of winning the world championship. But look at the 1987 Cardinals. They trade Van Slyke and Mike LaValliere and Mike Dunn to Pittsburgh right before the season opened on April 1st. And they get Tony Pena. And Tony Pena was hurt, and he was not particularly effective for the Cardinals. But we certainly don't know that they would have made it to the World Series had they not made that trade. So even though Andy Van Slyke had an illustrious career and was a great, great player for a long time, I still think that because the Cardinals made it to the World Series and went to Game 7 of that World Series, that that was a trade that was worth it.
And I would agree with that, too, and maybe also look at it in context. Getting to the World Series is a victory for a lot of organizations, especially if you haven't been there for a very long time. Mm-hmm. It's also still a victory in a way if you've won one recently, and they had just won one 5 years prior to that. So I think it's, look, it's only realistic to look at your team, and if they win a World Series within a decade, then they go to two others, that's a pretty good run.
Yeah.
And you should be happy with that as a fan. So the fact they got back there with Van Slyke, or without him, I think that's perfectly fine.
Now, of recent vintage, the one that stands out the most is the Cubs making the trade, trading Gleyber Torres to the Yankees. And Torres is going to be an all-star, and he'll be great for a long time. But the Cubs got Aroldis Chapman back, and he was the closer that helped them get to the World Series. He didn't finish the World Series, but because they won the World Series, if you're a Cub fan, even though you gave up Torres, you make that deal again and again and again.
Absolutely. Torres is the guy that they're going to miss the most, obviously, because he's really good. He's having a good year for the Yankees. I think his OPS is close to 900. It's not quite there, but it's close. And that's the kind of production you want, especially for a premier shortstop. So you got to be happy with that if you're New York. But winning the World Series for, and talking about a team that had not been there in, you know, 100 years, you have to be happy with that. There is no downside to that deal. You won the World Series for the first time in over a century. That's all that matters. And it doesn't matter if you give up your absolute best prospect in order to get that done. You got it done.
Now, there are some
crunchers. Also, real quick, yeah. Randy, you could, and I don't know if we're just talking about trades here, but you can even add the Jason Hayward signing into it. It's a ton of money. And it's more than he is probably worth, but they won a World Series with that signing and with that guy playing right field for them.
Yeah, I would say that that deal is worth it. Now, here's another one that is different, because the Red Sox of 1990 lost the ALCS. They traded to try to get to the World Series that year, Jeff Bagwell to Houston for Larry Anderson. If you don't win, and this happens extremely rarely, if you don't win, it can be devastating. And that's one of the deals that it happened. There aren't many deals where the prospect going back turns out to be a Hall of Famer like Bagwell did.
Right. That's the kind of thing, though, because, again, this is all about the end result. And that's why sometimes you can't really judge the trade until you're a few years into it. Did you win the World Series with that guy on your roster? The answer is always yes. If the answer is yes, the other answer to that is always this was worth it. You mm-hmm. cannot lose by winning a World Series. You know what I'm saying? You don't lose a trade if you won a World Series with a guy because there's no guarantee you ever get there with those prospects. You know, yeah. And so that did not work for them because they didn't make it there.
The trade deadline in 1989, the Minnesota Twins sent Frank Viola, who had been a Cy Young Award winner, to the Mets for pitchers Rick Aguilera, Tim Drummond, Kevin Tappany, David West, and Jack Savage. Mm. Rick Aguilera wound up, I think he had almost 300 or more than 300 saves. He was a pretty serviceable guy. David West bounced around. Tappany bounced around. They were okay. And actually, Frank Viola was never great for the Mets. He certainly didn't help them get to a World Series, let alone win one. But that's one where kind of everybody lost.
Well, then that happens a lot, yeah. too. So in that case, what is it? That's fine, right? I can handle a trade after the fact if nobody wanted it.
Yeah. The best deadline trade for the Cardinals, aside from Ernie Brolio for Lou Brock yep. in 64, the best one recently in the last couple of decades was the trade of Cole Rasmus. July 27th, 2011, the Cardinals traded Colby along with Trevor Miller, Brian Tallett, and P.J. Walters to Toronto for Octavio Dotel, Edwin Jackson, Corey Patterson, he wore number 44 for the Cardinals, and Mark Zepchinski. And obviously, Dotel and Zepchinski were keys to that bullpen. Edwin Jackson was a starter for that team down the stretch and in the World Series. So that's one that worked out. Really
now,
well.
Now, from your perspective, because you were here when it happened, mm-hmm. how outraged were people
Nobody
they gave
was.
Up on Rasmus? Really?
Nobody was.
Really?
Because
well, I know there was all the clubhouse that, stuff
well,
and the
and
stuff
Tony,
with his dad or whatever. Yeah.
Tony had ripped him to Joe Strauss, of the late, great Joe Strauss of the Post-Dispatch. And once that happened, there was no way that Colby was ever going to be able to play for Tony again. Worked out perfectly. So at that point, Tony had won the World Series 5 years before. Colby wasn't lighting it up. And so I don't think anybody was really that upset. And they knew that once Tony did rip Rasmus and his dad, mm-hmm. there was no way you could bring him back anyway.
Yeah, I don't think you can do it
so
that for sure.
That was a really solid political ploy by Tony La Russa.
Which I wonder if he would have had that same, well, maybe he would, earlier in his career. You know, in his first couple of seasons. Because I don't think he didn't have the backing from people here, because I was here when he came in.
See, in 2011 was different because it was Mo. Walt did pretty much everything he said.
Right.
So when he wanted to get Andy Bennis and Ron Gant, they went out and got him. When he wanted to get McGuire, they went out and got him. I think it was a little different once Mo arrived on the scene.
I do recall arguing with people, and I was, you know, still in high school when it happened, people who didn't like him, that didn't like mm-hmm. Tony. And the argument is, look, he's not Whitey Herzog, but stop. He's one of the greats. And this is a good thing for this organization that he is here. But that was a long time ago,
right.
since he built up a ton of equity, which he should have because of the success. But, man, it's amazing how things were when it first started.
I had a buddy in 2011, and nobody thought that they were going to get to the playoffs, let alone win the World Series. I had a buddy who said, La Russa has run this organization into the ground. And I said, well, cool your jets a little bit. It's still a pretty good organization. And lo and behold, not only do they win the World Series in 2011, but it's been built up to the point with La Russa that they go to the playoffs in 2012, they go to the World Series in 2013, go back to the playoffs in 14 and 15. They had a pretty good foundation built by Tony La Russa here.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing you have to give time.
No doubt. And it deteriorates over time, too. And it has. It's the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. Next up, NFL players reporting for training camp, and that means Mike Sando's annual quarterback tier rankings are out. And Mike, now from The Athletic, joins us next on 101 ESPN. Brad Thompson is out today. Chris Ronji, Randy Carricker with you in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN in St. Louis. And our friend Mike Sando, who we've talked to for years as a contributing writer at ESPN.com, has made the move to The Athletic, and Mike is with us now on 101 ESPN via the Brown and Crouppen Celebrity Line. Mike, first of all, thanks for taking some time, and congratulations on the move to The Athletic.
Hey, thanks very much. It's great to reconnect. Now, we've had some really good conversations over the years. Always enjoyed them. So thanks for having me on.
We're thrilled to have you with us, and we always enjoy and are intrigued by your tiering of the quarterbacks in the NFL, and you have that out now. I want to start with this before we get into specifics. Was there a quarterback or two that surprised you with where they landed? Did you have a preconceived notion about anybody and they didn't land where you expected them to land?
Okay, when I first started it, I didn't know how excited they would be on Mayfield, Baker Mayfield. So Baker Mayfield ended up coming into the second tier. I think that's probably higher than I would have guessed, like, you know, January, right? But as I started talking to guys, you could really feel the excitement. I didn't think there would necessarily be eight in Tier 1. That's a record since I've been doing this. And with eight in Tier 1, Matt Ryan's not one of them. You might think he would be considered among the top eight quarterbacks. He was close. But, yeah, those are a couple of them, I think, you know. And then just how down people are on Derek Carr. I knew people would be down on him, but it was like really down on him. Those would be a little bit of surprises.
Why should people not be so down on him?
Well, there's a difference between being down on him and being like, you know, I had like three different people cited plays from his season that they were just kind of appalled by, like fourth down throws the ball away instead of really trying to make the play, flinching in the pocket against Indy in a game last year. So, you know, you have to be a little careful that sometimes a guy's reputation causes you to look for stuff. But Carr was known when he came out for not really standing in there. And I think people were seeing that last year and were more critical of him even than I expected.
Mike Sando of The Athletic with us on 101 ESPN. Nick Foles makes it as a Tier 2 guy, 18 Tier 2 votes, 32 Tier 3 votes, and Tier 4 votes, 5. I'm kind of surprised that he got that many Tier 4 votes because even though there is a small sample size, heck, Nick Foles, if you look at the last couple of years, if you throw out the St. Louis year, he's been pretty good.
He has been. Now, he did come in
Tier 3.
Third tier, right? Yeah, he's in Tier 3. But people, you know, really respect what he's done, but aren't sure he can keep doing it. You know, is he just a relief pitcher who, you know, in a great situation with a good team, got his break? And, you know, would it be diminishing returns if he had to play the whole 16-game season? Jaguars will find out. I think no matter what, he's going to be an upgrade over Blake Bortles. So, you know, I don't think it's a big concern for Jacksonville. He was probably one of the best guys they could get and is a good locker room guy, too. I think people rally around him, like how he plays. But, you know, if you had to bet everything, would you bet that they're going to be looking for a new guy in the next 2 years? I mean, they still could be.
We were talking a little bit off the air before this, before we started talking to you, Mike, about Patrick Mahomes, and Randy asked the question, who votes for him for Tier 2? And then, you know, you do have seven votes for him. Is that, why do you think somebody would do that other than he's still relatively young and we don't know what his entire career is going to be? But based on last year, he was exceptional.
So I thought he might even tie for the top, you know, be right at the top. Seven people just basically said, yep, let's see him do it again. Let's see if defenses adjust to him. Let's see if some of the chances he takes with the football, you know, produce a little bit less consistent results. And I suppose that's fair. I mean, I just think when you're that good, you know, he was so, so good that there was nothing fluky about it. I think he's going to be back in Tier 1 probably with a higher percentage next year, but some people just want to see it again. They've been around a long time. They've seen, you know, people do well and then do not as well, but no one's done as well as he did, I don't think, in their first year of starting.
And overall, Mike, the respect for Aaron Rodgers in the league hasn't dissipated much, even though they missed the playoffs and he did not have the best of years. Injuries, obviously, a part of that. The league-wide respect for him is still there.
It does. Now, people are still talking about him in a different way because, you know, they have some questions. They just weren't willing to downgrade him to a two. Once you start doing that, then you have Rodgers behind guys that he's better than. And so I think everyone's going to be watching this year to see, hey, okay, you know, we'll buy it that McCarthy had grown stale or you'd like to play in a different offense. But I think there's going to be more blame on Rodgers if it doesn't go well this year than there was, you know, after what happened with McCarthy.
I've got my Bears friends who host shows, and they tweet about the Bears. They have this this running thing where every day they try to answer the question, is Mitch Trubisky good? So I'm going to ask you, is he good, yes or no? And expand on it, please.
Yeah, I think he's okay. You know, I mean, it's a little bit of a bailout answer. But, you know, when you got a defense that's, you know, basically they're holding people to 15 points in the games. You know, I mean, those are 90% wins, whether you've got Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback or Alex Smith playing quarterback, you know. And so he hasn't been asked to do more than that. I think they've done a good job of bringing him along, but how could you possibly say that he's been a driving force behind their wins? And then beyond that, to get respect at quarterback in a league, you've got to show yourself as a passer. And so what have they done? You know, he's made a lot of his plays with his legs, and they've set up the passing game. It's not like he's dropping back and throwing it all over the yard. It doesn't mean he can't do it, but he just hasn't been asked to do what you have to do to get respected in the league at quarterback. And if they're great on defense again, offensive scheme works, they're not going to have to ask him again. But guess what? To keep advancing in the playoffs, someone's going to ask you, right? And that's what happened even to Jared Goff, who's better than Trubisky. He hit the end of the road in the playoffs when they made it hard on him.
Mike Sando of The Athletic with us on 101 ESPN, and he has his annual quarterback tiers out at The Athletic, and the biggest jumpers and the biggest droppers. I wanted to ask you about Russell Wilson, too, because you see a lot of him. You're in the Pacific Northwest,
yeah.
And he always seems to be bringing teams back. He seems to do elite things. I figured that he would be, even though this is his highest rating, I figured that he would be a little higher rated.
Yep. Well, there's a few things you can figure on that. Number one, when you play in a system where it's so heavily run-based, and a quarterback, people on other teams look at that and say, yeah, he's not really doing exactly what Breeze has done or Rodgers or Brady. And, you know, he's throwing it 10 times per game fewer on average than a lot of those guys, and they're keeping the turnovers down. And, yes, when it's winning time, he does a great job, and he runs around and makes plays, and he's a great deep ball thrower in the context of a run-oriented offense. But for him to even get in the top tier, people needed to see that defense fall off and see him make up the difference, and he did that. I mean, they were a playoff team without a great defense, and that's what I'm talking about with Trubisky. It's like, you know, it's hard as a quarterback to get as much respect when you're on a team that's all about defense and running the ball.
For probably 4 or 5 years, we've been trying to figure out if this is the year Tom Brady's not going to be as good anymore, but he still keeps doing it. When is that going to happen?
Got to be when his legs go. I don't see a reason for that to happen, you know, right now. But, you know, you talk about the same head coach, really the same coordinator, right? I mean, basically Josh McDaniels has been there in one capacity or another for probably close to 10 years. And I think having that whole system together with him is powerful and helps him, you know, not have to start over with a new system, not have a coach he's getting used to. There's a comfort zone there that I think lets him stay at a higher level more easily than if things were changing. So also these older guys, he's not the only older guy playing. He's the oldest guy, but you know, Rivers is still good. Roethlisberger is still good. Breeze is still good. Slowed down a little late last year. There's a lot of old guys playing now, you know, because they're not getting hit as hard. They're not getting ear-holed. You know, they're protected. And everyone's into nutrition now, you know. I was joking about this the other day. You just go to your gym or just out in public, there's so many more people that are in way better shape than it used to be. And that's these quarterbacks. Tom Brady, look at him. His face looks younger now than it did 10 years ago. It's lean. I mean, he's prolonged his career in a way that maybe other guys didn't do years ago.
Hey, Mike, a couple of more quick things. Josh Rosen was rated by the NFL executives at number 32. 7 Tier 3 votes, 47 for Tier 4, 1 for Tier 5. That being said, and it was written about in your piece at The Athletic, he is intriguing.
Yeah. People are, I think two things are at work here. Number one, there's just fewer horrible quarterbacks in the league. I mean, just about every team has some hope at the position. And you'd say Miami might be the one team that doesn't. But, yeah, they got a guy who was picked in the first round last year. He's not for everybody. You know, there's concerns about his personality and ability to lead a team. But if Josh Rosen in your second year is the last guy, I mean, that reflects very well on the state of quarterbacks in the league because he does have some hope. I mean, he can throw the ball. And I like for Miami, they're not married to him. They don't have to spend 3 years waiting for him. Not that any of you would know what it's like to spend a lot of years waiting for a quarterback over and over. But,
never.
You know what I mean? They can sort of take a flyer on him. They got Jim Caldwell, good coach. Why not give it a go? And they can always, if they're terrible this year, draft one early next year.
And finally, before we let you go, Mike, you interviewed 55 and surveyed 55 NFL coaches and executives. What sort of enthusiasm do you get from them for a project like this?
They like it. And so, you know, there's always new guys in it who haven't done it before. And once they sort of get the hang of it, they really enjoy it. The key is reaching guys when they've got time to do it, you know. And so I've gotten better at that, just knowing when guys can do it and giving them time. You know, it takes time. So a lot of these ballots are coming in, you know, even some of them the last week of the project. So it's fun. It's the funnest thing I do every year.
That's great. And we always have appreciated your work, and we're glad that you're at The Athletic, and hopefully we can talk more football as this season unfolds.
Absolutely. Hope so.
Right. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it. Take care.
Yep.
That is Mike Sando from The Athletic, spent many years at ESPN.com, and he'll do great things for The Athletic.
So what I heard was Mitch Trubisky, he's okay.
He's okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's kind of like the what's the ad? It's like the doctor. What do you think of this doctor?
Oh, yeah, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
It's Geico.
Yeah. Is it a Geico? Okay.
I think it is, yeah. It's like, you nervous? Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Hey, coming up, do you think the Cardinals should be big players as far as buying at the deadline? We want to hear from you with the Mic Drop feature on the 101 ESPN app next on 101 ESPN. And we want to hear from you with the Mic Drops from the 101 ESPN app. Ronge, what do you think? Have the Cardinals done enough, in your opinion, since the All-Star break to make them buyers, big-time buyers, like Marcus Stroman or Mike Minor buyers at the deadline next week?
All depends on the price. That's what it comes down to for me. I'm not willing to give up my absolute top prospects in order to make a Stroman deal happen at this point. I'm not there yet. I think it still comes down to what we talked about. I think it was yesterday. If it wasn't yesterday, it was the day before, that the way they've played, for me to really think, okay, this is it, they're back, they're good, they need to do this for more than 2 weeks. It needs to be 3, 4, maybe longer than that. There is still a long way to go in this season.
They only have a week to go, though.
I know there's a week to go before the trade deadline, but for me to really believe in them, and that's what we're talking about, it's unfortunate that it's happening now.
You can't justify giving up a prospect to make a big buy.
I can give up a prospect, but I'm not giving up Nolan Gorman to make it happen.
No, I'm not either.
Or Carlson.
I'm with you there.
Not to make a Stroman deal happen.
No.
Especially for somebody who's not going to be around.
We appreciate your Mic Drops. Here's our first one on 101 ESPN.
Even if Moe and Gersh decide that they want to make a splash at the deadline and push for the playoffs, the guys that are out there in the positions that we need filled, there's not a real good match for that. Plus, with the people that are on the injured list right now, there's not a whole lot of capital that's going to keep this team viable for the rest of this year and in the years to come. You know, with Carpenter's bad contract and Ozuna's expiring contract, it's not good.
All right, thank you, Jason, and well thought out, lucid points.
Now, let me amend something here. If we're talking about somebody like Stroman who's got a deal for next year also, and maybe even after that, then yeah, I'm willing to do it, because that kind of plays into what Jason's talking about here, that what are the long-term prospects? You know, it might be pretty good right now for the last couple of weeks, and who knows, they may go on a run here for the rest of the season, but I don't know if this team is worth doing that.
And I kind of think that because Bumgarner appears to be off the market now, when you're looking at a guy like Stroman who has control, you're probably involved in a bidding war to try to get him with everybody who wants starting pitching.
Probably so. And again, is this team in position for a rental? Is this team in position to give up best prospects in order to get a guy who's only around for the next 2 months, and I don't think it is.
If they think that he can help them win the division, now I'm not giving up a top prospect, but to get that guy, that lefty reliever that can help them win the division, I'm going to go a little bit further than I would have before, since they're only a half game out.
I'd agree with that. I'm not giving up anything more than a mid-tier guy to make it happen, though.
Emerson is on 101 ESPN.
So it's hard not to answer this question about what the Cardinals should do at the trade deadline without kind of looking at the Blues. And the Blues had a team where you know they had guys that could somehow put it together, and if they did, they'd go far. Even with the Cardinals rookies playing and these guys getting playing time, I mean, it's good for the experience, but as a whole, I just personally don't get the sense they just have everything they need. There still seems to be something missing.
Yeah, in its entirety.
As a whole. I really don't want to, okay, I know that we've been doing it, and sometimes it's half-jokingly. This is not the Blues team from this year. The Blues team was supposed to be one of the best teams in the West going into the season. Everybody knew that. Mm-hmm. The huge changes they made, one with the coach, and then two with the goaltender, both were in-house. So it wasn't like they didn't go outside the organization to trade for Jordan Binnington. They just threw him in because of injuries and nothing else was working, and it just happened to be aces for the rest of the season. So it's very different than trading assets to get somebody you know is good already.
Here's John on 101 ESPN.
The Cardinals are the one that boldly proclaimed in the Post-Dispatch at the start of the year, win now when it comes to 2019. And if they're not willing to make a move here at the deadline, then it's obvious. That's all lip service. That's their words, not you, not me, nor any other radio host or pundit. Do something.
They did say that 2019 stands on its own as a year that they had to make the playoffs.
That's fair. That is an absolutely fair criticism. But I think that it's also fair to say they didn't do enough during the offseason, and now they're kind of in a position where it's, I don't want to say too late, but kind of. You know what I'm saying? Maybe if you had signed that starter during the offseason, we're having a completely different conversation now, because that's not a thing you need anymore. You're already set in your rotation. So going to get the reliever is just another piece to put you over the top. They might be missing more than that just because they didn't do that during the offseason. So now it's a separate conversation, is do you blow this thing out just because you believe you can get to a division series or a wild card this year, and I'm not sure you do.
And you could have had Keuchel for just money.
Yeah,
if
that's
it. If you get a pitcher now, you're going to have to give up an asset.
That is the main thing, is that now you're giving up players, when in the offseason, all you're giving up is some cash.
Well, and a draft pick, but I'm talking about after the draft. But they could have competed for, he got 1 year and $13 million. They could have competed with that. Jeremy is on 101 ESPN.
They're making this run with three all-stars on the injured list right now. So let's see what happens. I'm not sure, but you never know.
Two of those guys were not really playing like all-stars anymore. I know what you're saying, and we hope that they can regain the form. But Ozuna probably would have been the Cardinals' all-star representative had he stayed healthy. But Carpenter is far from being at his all-star level, and Yachty is 37 years old now.
See, now I think if they are playing like they're supposed to, they're in first place. The team is in first place, I would say.
Unless the Cubs are playing like they're supposed to.
Unless the Cubs are playing like they're supposed to. But if the Cardinals are getting those three guys the performance they're supposed to for the entire season, now you're talking about reinforcement. Where the Cardinals are right now is not in need of reinforcements. It's in need of improvement. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a subtle difference there.
There is, yeah. Let's get to Steven with our last mic drop on 101 ESPN.